Can you guys hear me in the back? Okay, good. Well, good afternoon. Should I begin?
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Sunil Agarwal. I'm a program manager with SQL Server team. I've been with SQL Server for the last 12 years. And in-memory OLTP is something that came out in SQL Server 2014. It's a really exciting technology for us. It has helped many of our customers get order of magnitude better performance. If you might have gone to Kevin Farley's session yesterday, just raise your hands. I see like 15-20% went to Kevin Farley's session. Let me ask you differently. How many of you know about in-memory OLTP engine in SQL Server? Have you played with it? How many of you have played with it? Okay. So pretty much like 50% of you know about in-memory OLTP, and very few have played with it. And this is a 400-level talk, so it was more on monitoring and troubleshooting. And what I will do is, and this is actually what I had planned as well, is the how you manage memory for SQL Server in-memory OLTP is very different than what it is for the traditional tables, and also the storage. So my goal in this talk is to give you a deep drill down on how the storage is managed and how the memory is managed, all right? It is primarily a demo-driven thing. And if you have questions, please raise your hand, ask me the questions, because then I will know that I'm communicating well with you guys, yeah? So the key takeaways are that with in-memory OLTP, the key requirement is the data must live in memory. Okay. Now, this is very different than your traditional disk-based tables, where your table could be terabyte-sized, and you only get the data that you want to query, right? You don't need that 1 terabyte of table sitting in memory at the same time, right? This is different with in-memory OLTP. Okay, we require that the full table has to be in memory. Okay, so there are questions: how do I manage my memory? How does the memory get garbage collected? Because if I update rows or delete rows, what happens? Stuff like that. In the second thing is the storage is not based on pages. In a traditional relational systems, you have database pages, right? Your page size could be 8K, 64K, whatnot, and you store rows in those pages. And when you want to access the row, what you do? You read the page, right? Now, there are benefits of pages, but there are challenges. Challenges are when you want to write pages, they are randomly written because I got the page of table T1, table T2, they are coming from different places, right? And when I do a checkpoint, for example, they go to all over the map, right? So that means is your storage media is getting a lot of random read-writes, which slows it down. It reduces the IOPS, the IOs per second that you could do. So what in-memory OLTP engine tried to do is to minimize random IOs, okay? So it has a very different structure for storage. So let me start off with the memory monitoring and troubleshooting. So if you look at a traditional SQL Server with 2014, this is pretty much what you have is the max server memory. This is the memory available to your SQL Server process. In the blue box in the bottom is the buffer pool. These are the pages for the disk-based tables that are coming in and going out, right? And then there is some memory available for internal structures like query plans, the connections, stuff like that, right? Those things are there. So these blue things are not new. They are there from SQL Server 2000 onwards, right? What we got the new thing is the yellow stuff, which is the memory-optimized tables, right? So if you have a database, you can have tables that are traditional tables and the tables that are memory optimized, right? This is actually a very key point about SQL Server, is that there is no in-memory database. There are in-memory tables, right? So you can have a database with disk-based tables and in-memory tables, right? And the powerful impact on that one is that when you have your application, not all tables are in the performance critical path, right? Only few tables are in performance critical path. And what we say is you move only those tables to memory optimized, right? Okay. So if you look at SQL Server instance, so there is some memory taken by memory optimized tables, right? Now let's insert more data into memory optimized table. So what happens is the yellow space grows, right? Because there was a, if I go to the previous thing, there was space available in my SQL Server process. Now it grows, it takes that. The memory optimized tables are memory hungry. They just get it and never let it go. I mean, they just keep holding to it, right? That's how they are. Unless, of course, you delete the rows, right? Now what happens is, if I insert more rows into memory optimized table, what happens is the buffer pool is a well-behaved entity in SQL Server. It tries to shrink. What it does is, it says, well, these pages were not accessed for a while, let me kick them out, and let me give more memory to memory optimized table. So memory optimized tables are happier. Hey, I got more memory. Now imagine this, you want to insert more data, right? So they keep growing and growing. And then buffer pool and everything becomes like critically low. And this is a very explosive situation, because once your SQL Server falls below a certain critical memory for other structures than memory optimized table, SQL Server will not perform well, right? So this is a situation that you want to avoid, right? That's the challenge with memory optimized tables. Now, because the memory pressure is bad, and if there is not enough memory left, it is not good for your workload. And in fact, if you start in this situation, start inserting rows into memory optimized table, and there is no memory available, what do you get? It will fail. The transactions will fail. It is almost like if you have a transaction log and you're inserting rows and transaction log is full, transactions start failing because there is no space to write the log. It is exactly like that, right? It is very different than your traditional disk-based tables, because they will page, they will slow down, but they will not stop, right? That's a big difference. So solutions, what are the solutions? Solutions are, hey, why don't I allow memory-optimized table data to be paged out just like traditional page tables, right? But there is no paging, right? And this is not supported with SQL Server. So what we came up with was we provide tools to manage the memory that is available to your memory-optimized table, right? And our guidance is, which is easier said than done, is you size your database or instance appropriately for the memory that you need, right? That's what we say. Now, what you can do is, you can, when you have a database, let's say you're migrating your application from disk-based table to memory-optimized table, you pretty much know the size of your table at that time, right? You can do some basic computation to say, I want to move this table into memory-optimized, I need this much memory, right? So you can get that. Now, you know at that time, but you don't know how it will grow, right? Because tables will grow. So what we do is you size the memory for the growth, okay? And as table is growing, we will provide you the monitoring tools to tell you how much memory is being taken. And then you can act appropriately, in the sense, like if your box is does not have enough memory for the application, you will need to add more physical memory. So what we are providing is a way to monitor it. Now, second thing which is important is, while your memory optimized application is running, I want to safeguard other applications that are running on the box, right? I'll say, okay, this gets messed up, but not everything else, right? So what we provide is a way for you to limit how much memory will be consumed by memory optimized tables. Now, the benefit of that one is it's an isolation technique, right? You can say only the application that is accessing memory optimized table will be impacted. Now, the other thing which is interesting is, like any OLTP system, you are inserting those, you are deleting, you are updating, lots of stuff is going on, right? Now, when you are deleting a row, the row is not just taken away from memory like that, right? It is still marked deleted, and there is a garbage collection that happens in the background that takes the row away, okay? Or when you update the rows in memory optimized tables is done as delete followed by an insert. So from a memory optimized tables, there are two operations, delete or an insert, right? So we have to be very aggressive about how we remove the deleted rows, because if we don't remove them, they keep taking the memory, and inserting more rows, suddenly there'll be more memory pressure, right? So that is actually a very important thing we need to focus on. So this picture you might have seen with memory optimized presentations. So here what I'm showing is there are two hash tables. These are hash indexes, the blue one and the red one. And notice one thing, which is actually a very interesting thing, that this row has a timestamp of 100, 200. What it means is this row was inserted by a transaction with a timestamp 100, and it was deleted by a transaction that has timestamp of 200. So that means this row lifespan is between transaction 100 and 200. That is, any transaction that starts after 100 and before in that range, 100 to 200, can see this row, right? If I start a transaction after 200, the row was already deleted, right? Okay. So here, what you see is that John was updated from Prague, moved to Beijing. So this is the transaction that updated the row John, right? It marked it as deleted here. And now the timestamp has become 200 comma infinity, which means it came into existence at time 200. And its end timestamp is infinity, which means it is the current row, right? So that's how they are linked. If you look at the red links, those are coming from the red index, and the blue links are coming from the blue index, right? Okay. Now, the question is, how does SQL Server know which rows I can garbage collect? Okay. Now, it can only garbage collect the rows when it knows that no transaction has a timestamp lower than the lifespan of this table, of this row. All right? So, for example, if you assume the lowest timestamp in the system at this time is 250, okay? If it is 250, that means this row is not going to be visible to any new transactions, right? Similarly, this row is not going to be visible to any new transactions, right? So now, let me do a transaction, which is doing select star from this table, where name is John. And notice this transaction, of course, starts at a timestamp 250 or above, right? So since the name is John, it's going to take the index, the blue index, right? And it's going to traverse here. And what it finds it, the row is 100 to 200. So this transaction cannot see this row. I mean, it sees the row, but it cannot return this row, right? So what it does is, as it is traversing, it removes the link, because then the next transaction that wants to read the rows will not have to traverse a row that is garbage, right? It is an optimization. But there's another interesting point. The user transactions participate in garbage collection, okay? So now this goes here, and then let's say the automatic garbage collection kicks in, right? Now the automatic garbage collection kicks in. To remove this row from SQL Server memory, it has to unlink the red link, right? Because this link should become null now. But for this row, the blue link has already been removed. So the point I'm making is the user transactions, as they're traversing the data, they're removing the links. So when the ultimate garbage collection has to happen, it has to do less amount of work, all right? So when the garbage collection kicks in, all those rows go away. Okay? This is the final state after the garbage rows have been removed. Now, this garbage collection, as I said, is very important, because if we don't garbage collect aggressively, you will run out of memory even though you don't have that much data to store. So the design of garbage collection, and this is where I'm going to have some demos for you. The design of garbage collection is, it is non-blocking. What it means is that garbage collection is not a heavyweight process that consumes a lot of resources in the system. We are doing garbage collection with every transaction, right? So it's a shared responsibility. So you will see there's no up and down in your workload because garbage collection is running. A comparable thing would be the checkpoint, right? When you do a checkpoint, suddenly there's a lot of I/O in the system. Your workload throughput gets slowed down, right? But with the garbage collection, it is uniformly distributed, so it is non-blocking from an application perspective. Now, it is cooperative. What it means is the garbage collection is not the responsibility of one guy. Every transaction, when it sees a row that can be garbage collected, it removes the links from the index it was traversing, right? It does not remove the link from other indexes because it is not traversing those links. But if all those indexes are active, you can imagine that those links will get removed, right? So it is cooperative. And it is efficient, because efficient means I'm accessing that code path right now, I might as well remove the link, right? And responsive in the sense, if there is a lot of memory pressure, the garbage collection becomes much more aggressive. So it is basically running in a green zone, and suddenly when it realizes that there is less amount of memory left and more workload is inserting rows, it becomes very aggressive. So it is very responsive. We'll see that example. And it is scalable. It is scalable in the sense, let's say you have a system which is doing lots of updates and deletes, lots of transactions, right? So there's a lot of garbage to be collected. But since each of the transactions that is inserting, deleting, updating rows also do part of the garbage collection work, right? It is scalable. The more transactional activity you do, there are more garbage collectors, if you will, who are garbage collecting, right? So that's a very important point. So let me draw a picture here. This picture is interesting because there are some DMVs. I'm just going to use the word DMV. Do you guys know what DMV is? It's a dynamic management view. It is a relational view of internal structures inside SQL Server. Very, very powerful tool. Came out in 2005. Okay. So here, let's spend a few minutes on this table. And then I'll go to the demo. So basically, when the transaction commits, if the transaction has either deleted a row or an inserted a row, it committed, right? So what it do is, any transaction that committed, which has delete or update a row, we put them into these 16 queues. We have these 16 queues, and they're staggered in the sense that each queue has 16 transactions. The next 16 will go to the next queue, and so on and so forth. And the final queue has everything. It's just to stagger the garbage collection workload. So the horizontal green table that you see, these are queues. So as transactions are committing, SQL Server says, did you update or delete any row? Yes, it will put them into the right queue. Okay, what it means is these transactions have created some garbage that needs to be collected, right? Okay. Now what happens is there's a background task. This is the garbage collection guy. It wakes up every minute. It wakes up every minute. And it says, is there any garbage for me to collect? And if there are rows into those queues, like those green queues generations that I'm talking about, what it does is it moves them to these bottom queues, right? And those green things that you see here, these green things, this is unit of 16 rows. So if I deleted, say, 256 rows, I will see 16 entries distributed across all these queues. Now, what are these queues? There is one queue per core. My laptop has 4 cores, so there are 4 queues. If I had a 16-core machine, there will be 16 queues. Now, what it means is when a user transaction runs on one of these cores, after it commits the transaction, it looks at, is there any garbage lined up on my core? Yes, it is. it will clean up that garbage. Okay? So basically, user transaction is doing two things. While it is traversing the index, if it finds a garbage row, it removes the link. And after the transaction commits, it looks at its core and removes those rows, right? So that's how it is done. Any questions on this? Okay, question. Yeah. So I heard why there are 16 generations. There are 16 generations. And yes, right. So the question is there a promotion? So basically what happens is you start running transactions with deleting rows. I'm going to take a very simple example. 16 transactions go to generation 1. The next 16 go to generation 2, on and on and on, right? And when the garbage collector guy comes, which picks up these guys from the generations and put them into the bottom queues, it moves such things one generation down. This is how it is moving. Okay. Okay, so let me do a demo for you guys. And okay. So everybody can read in the back? Yes? Okay, thank you. So here, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to create a database, and I'm going to call the database in-memory OLTP database, okay? Before I do that, I want to create a resource pool. What we have done is you can map a resource pool to a database, okay? And then you can say that the resource pool can take X amount of physical memory. Now, any memory-optimized table in that database can only take memory available within its pool, okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a resource pool, and I'm going to say that give only 20% of physical memory to this pool. So what I'm telling my system is only 20% memory is available to the memory-optimized tables, okay? Now I'm going to create my database. This is IMOLTP, in-memory OLTP database. And here is the database is created. So don't worry about the second line over there. I'm going to talk about that when we look into storage. Now, first thing I need to do is bind my database to the resource pool, all right? So I bind my database to the resource pool. Now, to make this binding apply, I need to take my database online and offline. The first thing I'm going to show you that my database in memory OLTP now bound to the resource pool, at least from a catalog perspective. But to make the binding stick, I need to take database offline and online. So I'm going to cycle my database, okay? So we don't expect you to do this operation every day. I mean, you bring your database in production, map to a resource pool, and I'm done, right? That's what it is. Now, let's say I'm going to use this database, and I'm going to create a table. So notice here, it's a memory-optimized table, and the durability I chose schema only. This is just for this demo. We provide two kinds of tables. Durable table, which is like your traditional tables. You bring your system down, recover, whatever not. Those tables are there. We also provide a flavor of memory-optimized tables called non-durable memory-optimized tables. Okay? You declare that by schema only. Now, why it is useful? For example, if you have transient data, you have an ETL process that is loading data from outside. You want to clean up the data, and then you want to move to the destination table. Your landing zone could be memory-optimized table, right? So that is non-durable table. Very, very powerful. So I'm going to create the table. Here. Oh, it is already created. Okay. Now what I'm going to do is set no count on. One thing I want to show you is how much memory is being taken by this table. Notice, I'm going to do this guy. This DMV, this is a DB XCP table memory stat, shows that object ID so-and-so. It is taking zero memory right now because I just created the table, right? However, there are two indexes on this table. One is a hash index and one is a range index. So those indexes are taking some physical memory, which is over here. All right. Now, this is a little different than your traditional disk-based tables, because when you create a hash table, hash index, we create a hash table statically at the time of create table. That's why you see so much memory is being taken, right? It's approximately 8 megabyte because my table has 1 million entries in my hash table. Each entry is 8 bytes, so 8 megabytes, something like that, right? So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert 1,000 rows. Okay, before you even go there, notice I intentionally chose the row to be around 8K. It just makes the math much easier. So each row is approximately 8,000 bytes, right? So now I'm going to insert 1,000 rows. Right? 1,000 rows inserted. It's like that. And if I want to look at the memory now, you can see it's got 8,000 kilobytes, right? 8,000 rows each. You see that? It is coming up there. And also I want to show you the DMV for the memory, the garbage collection thing, okay? I'm going to show you the generations, right? So here you see the generations, and in fact before the presentation began I did some testing. So these are the four queues that I was showing at the bottom, because four core machine, these are the queues where user processors or user transactions will clean up the data. Now first thing I will do is I'll go and delete all the rows. Okay? Now when I delete the rows, the memory is not made available right away. It is still taking the memory. So what has happened is I deleted the rows, but they have not been garbage collected yet. So one of the common questions customers will ask you, or you will see, I deleted the rows, how come memory is not collected? Because the point is, it is not a synchronous thing. We need to make sure there is no user transaction. In this case, there is no user transaction, but we do that polling every minute, okay? So that's what has happened so far. Now, if I go back to my GC monitoring and I run this guy, you will see this is one transaction that was copied because I deleted the rows, right? And then that's all it is doing. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert 100,000 rows, okay? I know when I insert that many rows, let me just make sure I have no set count on because it gets crazy. Okay. So far everybody with me, why the garbage collection did not happen, right? So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to insert 100,000 rows, okay? So this is inserting 100,000 rows. And I know that the memory that I have allocated in the resource pool is not sufficient for this. So I'm going to run that. And I'm going to hit out of memory error, okay? So what happened, I'm inserting in a group of 2,000 rows per transaction, and I hit out of memory, okay? That's what I got. So if I go back to the memory DMV, you will see it got this much memory, right? And if I look at my garbage collection, notice I got some garbage collection happened, right? Notice that it had total enqueued 20 items per core. Each item is 16 rows, right? So it did some garbage collection, and that's where it is. But if I look at my memory, it is this much, but I hit out of memory, okay? And if I look at resource pool, I'm going to run the resource pool. Notice that the memory only came from the pool where I mapped my database to. Everything else is fully available, right? So this is one key point that I'm isolating how much memory being taken by memory optimized tables. Okay, now what can I do? I mean, of course, in this example, I simulated out of memory. What you can do to get around this issue is you can, okay, let me see how many rows I got. I wanted to insert 100,000 rows. I only got 82,000 rows. After that, I got into out of memory. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to alter my resource pool. And instead of 20%, I'll say, okay, take 40%, right? Now, this can be done online without taking database offline at all, right? And if I go to the resource pool, you will see now the maximum available memory is a lot more than before, right? So what we expect customers to do, once they have mapped the database to a resource pool, and if the memory is coming close to full, they can possibly change the resource pool limit, and then everything should just work like before, right? So now what I'm going to do is F5. So notice I had 82,000 rows. I'm going to insert some more rows now. I'm going to insert 50,000 rows more because I doubled my memory, right? In the previous version, I had 82,000 rows. So I doubled it. So I'm going to be able to insert another 82,000 rows, right, approximately. But for now, I'm just inserting 50,000 rows. And this will succeed. So now what happened is because I increased my resource pool, I can fit in more memory, right? Now what I do, I'm going to delete all the rows in my table. So that means I'm deleting 132,000 rows, okay? So I do the delete. And if you look at the GC here, you see all these transactions are getting lined up in these generation queues. This is, the delete is going on, right? And now delete is done. So notice what has happened is, my resource pool is 40%. I had 132,000 rows. I deleted all of them, right? Now I'm going to insert another 100,000 rows, right? That will make it 232,000 rows. That should not fit in my memory unless garbage collection happens, right? So what I'm going to show you is because I'm going to insert 100,000 rows, garbage collection will become really aggressive and clean up everything, okay? So the next thing I'm doing is I'm loading 100,000 rows. So I'm loading 100,000 rows. And let's monitor the garbage collection. You saw the current queue depth suddenly became, so what actually this is interesting to notice these columns. So what happens is when the main thread, when it creates an entry into those queues of 16 rows, it says enqueued. And when those things are garbage collected, they are called dequeued. So notice what has happened here is that current queue depth is zero. There is nothing to be garbage collected. So those things happen. If I go back to this guy, everything became fine. So the thing I want to try to show you is the garbage collection is very responsive to that. So let me do one more thing, which is also very interesting. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open a file and a shock absorber. This is another script which is actually quite interesting. So I'm going to first delete all the rows, 100,000 rows, right? I just delete those rows. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this so that you can see the full loop. What I'm doing here is I'm looping across multiple rows. And what I'm doing is I'm loading 3,000 rows into memory optimized table. I sleep for a second. Then I copy them to somewhere else. Okay? And I just keep doing that. So over time, I expect that garbage collection to kick in to any rows that I remove will get garbage collected. Let me just show you what I'm doing here. See, notice here, I'm inserting in a transaction 3,000 rows. Yes? Then I sleep for a second. Sleep for a second, right? And then I delete all the rows from the memory optimized table. So I'm inserting 3,000 rows, sleep for a second, delete the rows, come back in the loop, right? So if the garbage collection is not going to happen, I will run out of physical memory, right? So I want to show this in a loop, see what happens, okay? And so let's run this guy. This guy is going to run. And in the performance monitor, I'm going to start it. So what you see is the bottom thing that you see, the top thing that you see is the limit available in the resource pool for this database. And the green line that you see
is how much memory is being consumed, right? And at some time you saw it just went down because what happened, the memory pressure was hit, everything was garbage collected. And now the green thing is going to up again because I'm inserting rows, deleting rows, but they're not getting garbage collected, right? Because it has to wait either for the memory pressure or for certain transactions to happen. And then you will just see the zigzag thing, right? So the key point I want to leave you with this memory management perspective is that the system has been designed to do garbage collection in a very aggressive and a proactive way. But the challenge that you have on your side is to make sure your system has the physical memory that you need for your table. And you can use resource pool to control how much memory can be allocated to memory optimized tables. So this actually concludes my memory demo. Let me stop here and go back to the presentation. Any questions so far on this? Yes, sir. Sorry? Okay, right. So this is actually very interesting. The question is, can you truncate an in-memory table? Truncate is not available in SQL 14. It is something we are looking at. You just do delete, which is, of course, fully logged operation, right? You cannot. But the key point is that if you delete all the rows or you drop a table, those rows become garbage in a big chunk, right? And the garbage collection will kick in just like a normal delete. Yeah. Okay. So the second thing I want to talk about is the storage. Storage is very interesting for SQL Server in memory OLTP. So let me spend a few minutes on this picture. Very interesting. So in a traditional SQL Server, what you have is you have multiple file groups, right? And you map a file group, a table to a file group, or multiple tables to a file group, right? And file group is nothing but bunch of files. It has pages of size 8K, right? That's how it is. Now, interesting thing about disk-based tables is that a page belongs to only one table. Two tables cannot write to the same page, right? Because they have different schemas. A table has its own page. This table has its own page, on and on, right? That's how it is. Our goal was provide a storage structure which minimizes the random IOness, right? That's what we wanted to do. So what we have is, instead of traditional pages that you see in your disk-based tables, we have these files. And there are two kinds of files, the green file and the red file, okay? And I'm going to tell you what those are. The green file contains the rows that you insert, okay? Doesn't matter which table. So if I have five memory optimized tables and I insert one row each on those tables, they all will be persisted in the green file one after the other. Okay. One benefit is that you are only appending to a single file even though you're inserting data into lots of tables. You see that? Okay. That means the rows on the green file will of course have different lengths, but that's fine. Now what happens is, if I want to delete a row, don't I have to go to green file and say row number 3 is deleted, right? Or I have to remove the row, which means random IOness, right? Because I have to go back to the previous point in the file. Or what happens if I update, which is delete and insert, right? That's where the red file comes in. Green file only contains inserted rows, and the red file stores the pointer or the key of the rows that you deleted. So let's say I insert five rows. I got five rows in my green file, right? Then I delete two rows. I'll get two entries in my red file. Everything is still append, even though I did it deletes and updates, right? So both append. So the green file is called the data file, and the red file is called delta file. Okay, basically the data file and delta file. Now, interestingly, these green and red file is a pair. Okay, so for example,
a green file can say I have all the inserted rows by transactions in a timestamp 0 to 100. So all the transactions that were started between 0 and 100 timestamp, whatever they inserted, I have them. So when I want to delete a row, remember in my row I had a timestamp, which timestamp created the row and which time deleted the row, right? I had the timestamp. When the transaction comes and wants to delete a row, it knows which transaction had inserted the row, right? What it does is it appends the row in the corresponding red file. So when you see this pair, the red file only contains deleted rows which came in its green file. You see that? So it's a pair. And this pair has a time range, like timestamp range. So 0 to 100 is what it is, right? And the stuff that you see here is the, this is how it looks like the entries. It may not be as visible. I think the color combination was not good. It says the transaction timestamp that inserted the thing, row ID, table ID, because rows can belong to different tables, right? And the row payload, the binary image of the row, right? So that's how the data is being inserted. Similarly here, it says the transaction that inserted the row, transaction that deleted the row, and the row ID. It's not the full copy of the row in the red file. So you can imagine, right? When you size the database, the red file will be much smaller than the green file. You agree? Because green file has the full image of the row. Red file just has transaction ID and the pointer to the row, right? So that's how it is. So these are the called pairs. And we allow, I think, 8,048 pairs of these files. That's the maximum we allow. And each green file up to can be 128 megabytes. So 128 megabyte and you multiply it by 2048, you get 1 terabyte. So that much storage is available for your memory optimized tables, okay? And the red file, I think, is, it could be wrong, 8 megabyte. 128 versus 8, okay? That's how it is. So you can imagine, now you contrast the storage that you have for disk-based tables versus memory-optimized table. Memory-optimized table is bunch of red and green files called checkpoint file pairs. Checkpoint file pairs. We have a bunch of those, 8,048 of such pairs, right? That's what it is. And we are writing to each of those files in append-only mode, okay? Now, once the green file is closed, like I'm done with the transactions that were between 0 and 100, the green file becomes read-only because there is nothing you can do there now. But the red file is not read-only, right? Red file, because row inserted here could be deleted by somebody in future, right? The red file is read-write, but the green file is read-only after it has been closed, right? Okay. So far, so good. Now the problem comes. What happens is, over time, you are inserting rows, deleting rows, updating rows. Notice here that the green, I'm just showing them in a very nice ranges, 100 to 200 and 200 to 300. Of course, in reality, they will be all complicated, right? Because whatever size can be fit into one green file is there. But one thing is, we do not let a transaction span the green file, okay? If I start a transaction, all its row must live in that same green file, right? Now, here's the interesting point. I start a transaction that is inserting 10 million rows, just making it up, right? Begin transaction, 10 million rows. That green file may not be able to accommodate 10 million rows because it is 128 megabyte size. What it does, it grows, okay? So when you look at any time, your data files may be of different lengths, okay? Okay, but traditionally, commonly, OLTP environment, you don't insert 10 million rows. These are short transactions. Typically, what you will see is the 128 megabyte size files. Now, what happens is, now I'm deleting, inserting rows. You will see this red file that I'm showing here. They are filled to different capacities.
There is a way to track this growth in the merge, in the data file or data file.
Is there a way to
track the growth of the size?
Yes. So
there's
There are ways to show the sizes. What I'm going to do, I just wanted to give you some background, and then I'm going to follow through this with the creating a database, all these files, how they get merged, all those things. Just stay with me for a few minutes. Yeah. So now you see that the red bar, which is the delta file, is of different size. And you know why? Because I'm deleting rows differently, and that's what it is, right? Now, imagine what happens. As these guys deleted, there's a lot of storage that is getting wasted because I've deleted the rows, but they're still sitting in the green file because green file is read-only. So what we do is, periodically, we merge the files that we can, okay? One simplest example, I mean, the merge thing is a bit more complicated. The simplest example is, if I have two files and I deleted half the rows on each of them, I can merge them, make one file, right? That's a very simple example, right? So that's what we do. We do that in the background. So here, what you see is I have these green and red files, and I realize that, I mean, SQL Server realizes automatically, there is no manual merge needed, that these can be merged into one. So what it does is, it makes them purple. It lists in the slide, it makes them purple, yeah? And it says, this is what I need to merge, okay? And when it is merging, it creates a new green file, which has a range now 200 to 400. You see that? Because I'm merging this and this, which has range 200 to 300 and 300 to 400, right? So when I merge them, it becomes 200 to 400, right? Now this operation, when it is being done, it is completely online. What I'm saying is your database transactions, they keep going. There's no issue there, right? So now it merges them, merge is complete, and now it garbage collects them. So there are two kinds of garbage collection. The memory garbage collection, right, which we looked into the first part of the presentation, and there is a storage garbage collection. So those things are happening, right? So what we have seen with customers is they say, you know what, my database is I deleted so many rows, but my storage is not shrinking. What's going on? Again, this garbage collection happens over time. It is not instantaneous. And I want to show you a demo how this garbage collection is happening. All right? Okay. So, right. I think this is something also very interesting. So this is the last slide before the demo. So the data in the delta files, they go through multiple state transitions in their lifetime, okay? First we do is when you start SQL Server and you create a memory optimized table, we pre-allocate checkpoint files, okay? We allocate at minimum 8 pairs, but it can be proportional to number of cores you have. So we pre-allocate them. The reason is in a high transactional activity, you don't want SQL Server to wait to allocate those files, right? So we pre-allocate. It's almost like keeping some things in a pocket. As you need, I have the file allocated, right? So those are pre-allocated files. Once you start inserting the rows, we are persisting the rows that you're inserting to memory optimized table continuously. There is no periodic checkpoint. The checkpoint is happening 24/7. You're inserting the rows, and there's a thread that is persisting those rows into these files, okay? This is actually very different than disk-based tables. So checkpoint is happening all the time. Maybe checkpoint happening all the time is a wrong phrase. The persisting of the data to the files is happening all the time. Checkpoint is periodic, but when the checkpoint happens, the data is already on the disk, right? So checkpoint is not as expensive. So now insert the rows, it becomes under construction. And once a checkpoint happens, the file is already has the data, right? Then it is marked active. What active means is when I restart my SQL Server, I can read the rows from my active file and apply the transaction log afterwards, right? So that's what it is. So this is normal state of the files. Now, over time, there's a policy in the background that says, okay, this file has a lot of deleted rows. Can I merge, right? So then the merge kicks in, and the file takes a state of merge source because this is the source of a merge command which is happening in the background. And there's a merge target because I can take two files
4 files up to 10 files and merge them into one, right? For example, if I dropped a table, I may have a lot of deleted rows and a lot of files, right? I can just merge them. And once the merge target is complete, it becomes active. So from merge target, it becomes active. So notice the file is active. It can become a source of a merge if it has seen a lot of deletes, right? Those files can be merged into another file, which is called merge target here. And once merge is installed, it becomes active, right? Data moves there. And the merge sources are not needed anymore, right? Because I already copied the data into merge target. But we just cannot throw them away right away. Why? Because we want to make sure the transaction log point has moved to a point beyond the contents of those files, right? So we just cannot move them right away. So they are marked here as required for backup or high availability. HA is a high availability, right? So once the merge is successful, I cannot throw away merge sources. They are still available for backups and for a high availability, right? Once the log truncation point moves beyond that, then they are transitioning to tombstone state. Tombstone is a phrase which is you might have used in file stream. So the memory optimized tables are using file stream as the underlying storage. We don't call it file stream, but that's what it is. Okay. So what happens is after it transitions into tombstone, the in-memory OLTP engine does not know nothing about them. In the sense, it doesn't care. It is up to the file stream code to remove those rows, those files. Rows is the wrong word. Remove those files. And they get garbage collected, and that's how it is, right? So let me just piece it together, then I'm going to go to the demo to show you exactly what's happening, right? So you start a checkpoint file in a pre-allocated state. You start inserting rows into it. It becomes under construction. Once checkpoint happens, it becomes active. It can stay active for the rest of its life because you didn't change any data. Or if you delete rows, it may become a source of a merge. It gets merge target, right? And once rows have been merged, the merge source can be removed over time as a garbage collection, all right? Okay. Now let me go to the demo now. Okay. I'm going to come to this slide a little later, but what it is when you do a backup of a database, you have these data files and delta files. So first thing is, if a file is under construction or pre-created, your database backup will not backup any file, any data from those files, because there is nothing there, right? If it is active, it only backs up use bytes. Merge source, it still backs up use bytes. And if it is merge target, it is empty file. This is pretty much the point to note is that when we do the backup, we are smart about what data makes sense for backup. We don't blindly copy the whole files, okay? And you'll see that example. So let me go to the demo now. I think I typed the password wrong. Landed here sick, so okay. Oh, caps on. Thank you. Okay. Accomplishment, right? This is hard to do. Okay, so let's go through this demo step by step. I think this will be a very interesting demo. Okay. So first thing what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop the database to start completely fresh, okay? And what I'm going to do, I have actually, there are two directories. And let me do this. The directory on the left side is going to show you the location where the data files and delta files are sitting. And the right file, right window, is the size of the backups, because I'm going to do database backups and log backups. Just see the sizes, okay? It's going to be very interesting. Then I come here. Now, I'm going to create my in-memory OLTP database, okay? I created my database. And now, I'm going to create a simple table. Okay. Now, this is something I want to show you. So, I'm going to use my database. I have this trace flag 89851. What it is doing is, it disables automatic merge that SQL Server does, okay? We expect in production, customers are not using 89851 because merge is going to happen automatically. The reason I disabled it, because if I want to demo something and SQL Server becomes much smarter and then does the merge, I would not be able to show you a very consistent way what's going on. So I disabled the automatic merge. This is, I think, useful for demo for sure, right? So I disabled it. And now I'm going to make my database to full recovery. I'm going to create my same table that I created before, except notice my durability is data and schema, right? And this is the default option. When you create a memory optimized table, it is durable, right? The reason I did that, because I want storage to be taken now, right? Okay. So I'm going to create the table. Now, after I create the table, let's look at what happened here. I go back here. So notice, I have 18 items at the bottom, right? 18 items. I have 9 red files and 9 green files. Okay. So what SQL Server will do, it will try to keep, for by minimum number is 8 pre-allocated. It tries to keep 8 pre-allocated in the pocket. Right? So if I consume one more pair, it will try to pre-allocate one more. So just think of this, 8 pre-allocated most likely will be there, right? And other thing is, notice the size is 16 megabyte instead of 128 that I was talking about. So we did some optimization. We said if the machine you're running your OLTP on is less than 16 gigabyte, the file size will be 16 meg. Any machine over 16 gigabyte will be 128 megabytes, right? Just the otherwise, what happens is I'm running on a 16 gigabyte machine. I create a simple database. Suddenly, my storage space is so much more, right? So we just did some optimization there. So far, so good. Okay. And other thing that I want to show you here is the DMV. This is actually somebody was asking me. So there is a DMV. This is one of my favorite DMVs. And let's see what it shows. If you want to know anything about the storage, how storage is being handled in-memory OLTP, this DMV is your friend. I mean, this tells you exactly what is going on. And we'll be using this DMV a lot during this demo. So notice here, it says there are 9 data files, and there'll be 9 delta files, okay? 8 of them are under construction. 8 of them are under pre-created, right? Because we keep them in the pocket. 1 is under construction, okay? And if you look at space used is 0 because I have not done anything right now to those files, right? Now I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a backup of my database, okay? Empty database. If I look at my storage, I have 9 files of 16 megabytes, right? And let's see what the size of my backup is. Backup has happened. And if I go and look at the size, see, it's like 5 meg. So the key point is we are only backing up the data that we absolutely need for recovery or restore, right? So we're not backing up files blindly. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to run a transaction. And I'm going to insert 8,000 rows. Okay? Now, each of my row is 8 kilobytes. So 8,000 rows means 64 megabytes approximately. And each of my red file or data file is 16 meg. So that means I will get 5 more pairs allocated as part of running this thing, right? So let me run that. So while it is going on, we can even look at the, you can see that now, it became 26, right? Because it allocated more files. So even though checkpoint has not happened, but the data actually moved to those files. And this is actually, I want to say, it's a very important point, because we are not going to bring your workload down or slow down the workload because we have to persist the data. It is happening all the time. Okay. Now, if I want to look at my DMV, I can, this is my DMV. I'm going to run the same query again. And notice now, this is under construction. And if you add all these things, these are the number of rows that I've inserted, which is like 8,000 if you add this up. And they're still under construction. Okay, I'm going to do a checkpoint now. So when I do a checkpoint, what will happen is they all become active. Remember, I went from pre-created, under construction, to active. If I now restart my SQL Server will read the data from these files and apply the remaining transaction log, right? If I had not done the checkpoint, and if I brought the system down and start again, what will happen? I'll apply the transaction log records right from the beginning, right, to insert those 8,000 rows. So far, so good? Okay. So now, let me do a backup of my database. So before I delete anything, I backup my database. Okay? And now let us look at the size. You will notice the size is 138 megabyte, even though I inserted 64 megabyte. Do you know why? Because when I did database backup, it backs up the log also. Okay? So the data as well as the log, which is, of course, equal size. And I'm going to show you to prove that I'm not lying here. If you look at the thing, see, it is also processing the log. Right? The backup of the database is the whole thing right now. Because I'm running in a full recovery mode, if I do database log backups, then that part of the log that has been backed up will not be included in the database backup, but it is included, right? Okay, 138. Now, let us delete 50% of the rows. So I'm going to delete every other row. Okay? I'm going to delete the rows. And if you notice here, if I'm going to run the DMV, see, it is showing the rows are marked deleted. And notice all this is happening so fast, right? This is the beauty of in-memory OLTP. I mean, things are just flying. Everything is being logged as well, okay? So I deleted half the rows, and then my goal is to merge them and to see how this goes on, right? Now, as I said, in a traditional production environment, merges will happen automatically. We do not have to do anything, but we also provide a manual merge command. That's what I'm going to use. I'm going to merge all my files into one, which is something we don't recommend. I mean, imagine this, right? I will get one file with 4,000 rows, right? Which is 4,000 into 8 is like 32 megabytes. It will be much larger, right? But we don't prevent that. You can do it. So I'm going to go and merge. So the merge, the way I want to merge is, notice for these active files, there is a transaction number, okay? Beginning like a transaction bound. So I'm going to merge all these files into one. So I'm going to go this command. Let me do first a checkpoint. And I'm going to skip this backup. This is the command that I'm merging. I'm saying merge all my files within this transaction timestamp range. That's what I'm going to do, right? Okay. So I'm going to run this command. Merge has happened. It just took the data and merged it. And actually, I take that point back. Merge command has been submitted. When I look at this one, it says merge is pending. What I said to the system is merge these guys, and it is pending. So if I go back to my DMVs, you see the merge target, 4,000, and my source files are still active because they are the merge has not been installed. So if I do a checkpoint and I go back here, so now what has happened is the file which I merged five pairs together, you will notice this guy. You see that? Number 15. It got 4,000 rows, which makes sense, right? Because I deleted 50% rows from all the files, 8,000 rows in all. I got 4,000 rows, right? Now what happens to the merge source? I need to take care of them. So what happens is these merge sources will... We need to make sure that the truncation point of the log moves beyond the contents of these files, right? So that's what I need to do. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a checkpoint and do some log backups. So I'm doing some log backups, and I'm going to go to the DMV. So notice now it has transitioned from merge sources to this guy. If I do one more backup of the log, you will notice it should go in transition to tombstone. But notice what I did. I did three checkpoints, three backups, right? So it is going to take a while. Now, automatic checkpoint with memory optimized table happens after every 512 megabyte of log records, okay? So you delete a dropper table or delete lots of rows, the storage for that will not be available to you right away. It has to wait five or six checkpoints, which means 3 gigabyte worth of more transactions before it is taken away, right? So the question which actually when I was working with customers was, I just deleted all the rows, my storage is not gone, what's going on, right? So this is the reason. The storage doesn't go away right away. What we did was to prove that our garbage collection for the storage is keeping up, we took a database, TPCC-like database, 150 gigabyte size, okay? We did 16-way update-only transactions, nonstop, update-only transactions. That means they're just pounding the system, update, update, update. You can imagine the crazy amount of merge that will be going on because of that. What we found was, we ran that for days, that on average, the total storage was approximately 210 gigabyte, okay? So 150 was the steady state size because no deletes. So it was like 30%, 35%. So that's pretty much the overhead. So the key learning for all of us here is that when you are provisioning your storage for databases with memory optimized table, provision 3 to 4x of the storage that you need for your in-memory. So for example, if your in-memory table is 50 gigabyte worth of data, make sure you have storage approximately 200 gigabyte or above. This will take care of this merge and everything else, okay? And then I think once they are in tombstone, then they get garbage collected. sorry, I'll go here. Back up here. What I want to show you is the tombstone files get garbage collected by forcing the garbage collection. I mean, you can force it or you can let system take care of it. So it will take its own time. But key thing is to be aware of that. That's all I had for my storage. Let me switch back to the presentation. Okay, demos, okay. So far, any questions? I mean, I have literally 5 minutes, and I have one more slide to talk about. Any questions?
Okay. So this is a very interesting thing that a customer discovered for us. So let me give you the motivation. So notice the red file and the green file, data and delta, right? They get allocated in pairs. Okay. So when you create a memory optimized file group, what you do is it's a file stream kind of file group. So you give directories. You can say this file group has one container, that means one directory. Like the example that I have, I was showing you all the files in one directory. That's a one container. But I could create multiple containers. I can create 16 containers sitting on 16 different devices, right? So what we do is it allocates files in a round robin fashion. So first container, it gets the data file. Second container, it gets a delta file, like that, right? If you had created two containers, what will happen is data comes from container one, delta from container two, data from container one, right? So suddenly you get completely skewed allocation. You see that? So you will, if I had two containers, all my data will be in one container, all my delta will be in one container. So what can you do? One way is have odd number of containers, right? If you have three, data, delta, you know, they will even out. If you have two containers, two physical containers, you can create four logical containers, right? I can map two disks, two directories to the same disk, right? So it can even out. So that's how we are recommending that have odd number of containers. Now, this thing is actually important. The containers are very important because when you restart your SQL Server with memory optimized tables, all the data for memory optimized tables has to be in physical memory before database is online, right? This is different than disk-based tables because disk-based tables, data comes as you access, right? That means the availability of a database will be longer. It'll take longer, right? So what we did was we recommend customers to spread your containers across multiple devices because when we restart SQL Server, we can load them at the speed of I/O. Okay, so if your I/Os, you can load, let's say 500 megabytes per second. I'm making a big number here. And if you have a 100 gigabyte database, 20 seconds, you'll be done. Did I do it right? 500 to 200 seconds. That's what it'll take, right? So that is something to be aware of. Now, question comes, my final point on this one. This is not acceptable for availability, which I'm not disagreeing. But if you have high availability requirement, you will have always-on configuration. So if you have always-on configuration, on the secondary, the data is already in memory. So when you fail over, there's nothing to be read from the disk, right? So you get full fidelity in terms of availability that you're used to with SQL Server, and it's just that. So I think that's pretty much all I had for this presentation. Thanks for joining. And we have blogs on these topics. And I think my email is here. I'll be more than happy to, let me see. Oh, what happened here? Okay, let's just give me one quick second. Okay. So yeah, you can reach me at sunil@microsoft.com. I'll be more than happy to take any questions. And the interesting thing is, we are investing big time in memory over TP going forward. I've been involved with that. And any experience that you have with your customers and any challenges, let us know. Because with your feedback, we can fix the problem proactively. So thanks for joining, and have a great conference. Take care. Yeah.